Today's reading is a very short excerpt of a much longer speech by Frederick Douglass from his address on West India Emancipation, August 4, 1857. Let me give you a word of philosophy of reforms. The whole history of the progress of human liberty shows that all concessions yet made to her august claims have been born of earnest struggles. If there is no struggle, there is no progress. Those who profess to favor freedom and yet depreciate agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. They want rain without thunder and lightning. They want the ocean without the awful roar of its many waters. Now, this struggle may be a moral one, it may be a physical one, or it may be both moral and physical, but it must be a struggle. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never did, and it never will. Find out just what a people will submit to, and you will have found out the exact amount of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them. And these will continue till they are resisted with either word or blow or both. So the other night I was watching the final installment of the Harry Potter movie series, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallow, Part 2. You know, Hollywood had to stretch out the money, so they made two parts of what could be a one-part movie. Now, this movie has the epic final battle between Harry that leads the forces of good against Lord Voldemort, who is the personification of evil. Now, if you haven't seen the movie, I don't have the time, and don't remember it all, but I don't have the time to explain all the intricacies of it, but there is one scene towards the end that is actually very, very important because it brings a lot of the whole series, the other seven movies, into perspective. It's a very small element. It's when we find out, or we have the revelation of the motives of Professor Servius Snape. Now, from the very first movie, Harry and those, so therefore all of us that have been watching the movies have assumed that Snape was out to get Harry while he was really working through all of these years to protect him. Harry and all of us watching the movies were operating under a misunderstanding, a misconception of who this man was. And that is how real life often is. We sometimes make up our minds or take actions based on misunderstanding, misinformation, half-information, or non-information. I know that when I was growing up, misinformation, half-information, and non-information affected how I understood the civil rights and the black power movements of the 1960s and 70s. The information about how the lives of people of color provided through our education system at that time in the media was often incomplete or wrong if it was covered at all. And so from my perspective of my moderately affluent American life, I did not understand the issues underlying the frustrations of a significant segment of our society. Now, I came to understand some of the problems, just some of the problems that the black communities were having to live with and dealt with every day over the next decade as I made friends with black men in the army and worked with a black equal opportunity officer in my personnel director days. So I was sort of aware of the inequities in our societies that were visited upon black communities. But I must confess that I really did not pay any real attention, detailed attention, of what was happening to people in our country, to black people in our country. I think like many white Americans, I thought that the civil rights and anti-poverty laws and programs that had been acted in the 60s, 70s, and 80s had eliminated most of the problems. And I thought society was becoming or had become much more equal. And then, of course, there were all these other problems to try to learn about and respond to over the years. Pesticides, saving the whales, saving rainforests, hunger, women's rights, LGBT rights, Aboriginal people's rights, equal marriage, water justice, climate change, the 1%, refugees, the plight of the Palestinians, restaurant worker wages, and just on and on. And all these issues, at least for me, caused me to submerge my understanding and even paying attention to what was happening in black communities. And then a couple of years ago, I started to see news about a new social movement that seemed to come out of nowhere. The name Black Lives Matter started to appear along with black and yellow signs with the name on it, like the sign we have hanging back here. Now, I knew that it was somehow connected to protesting violence against black men that was usually just explained away by police as justified self-protection. I knew that it was controversial, and that was avowedly black in its orientation. But all civil rights movements are controversial because they challenge the established system. And this one, especially, was focused on law enforcement that is the darling of much of our society. And I know that the UUA was doing something with it in their social justice programming, but then they're always bringing attention to advocating for issues that somehow are about to do irreparable damage and harm to the world. And I knew that some of my colleagues were getting involved, but then some of my colleagues never met a social justice cause that they did not find compelling. But beyond that, I have to admit, I didn't know much. So last month, as I was starting to think about what was I going to talk about, at least for one of the services during Black History Month, and I was putting my sermon topics together, I decided that the Black Lives Matter movement might be an interesting topic for me to spend some time to study and then to bring to this 98% white congregation. So the questions that I had were, what is this organization's purpose and what was its operating principles? How is this new civil rights movement different than prior civil rights movements? And why is there an All Lives Matter versus a Black Lives Matter debate, including what is happening in Unitarian Universalist congregations? So that's the genesis of my sermon today. Now, the vote that we're thinking about taking, we'll be taking next week, is our response to the UUA statement of immediate witness, arose separately from my sermon planning, from people in our congregation who are concerned about the issues that BLM raises. So Black Lives Matter describes itself as a chapter-based organization working to build or rebuild the black liberation movement to emphasize the validity of black life in the United States and Canada. It is a call to action to respond to the anti-black racism that permeates society. The racism that did not go away with the civil rights victories of the last century. Its founders say that they intend for this new movement to go beyond the notion of traditional black nationalism that is found within black communities, that calls upon black people to love black, live black, and to buy black. Though this movement has its origins in what the founders call the extrajudicial killing of black people by police and vigilantes, the founders want to go beyond this and raise consciousness about and resist all of what they call state violence against black lives. Now, state violence for the BLM movement is both the direct violence, such as the brutal treatment of black men at the hands of police and the justice system over many, many years, but it also affects the societal neglect that deprives black people and black communities of their humanity, such as African Americans being incarcerated nearly six times more than white people and get stiffer sentences for the same crimes as white people, such as black people accounting for over one-third of the homeless people in this country, though blacks only make up about 13% of the population, such as 42% of black children are being educated and forced into high poverty schools, such as between one-fourth and one-third of families with children headed by black or Latino citizens experiencing overcrowded living conditions, difficulties in finding and paying for food, and the lack of needed medical care, and such as over 500,000 black people relegated to live in the shadows because the government does not address immigration issues. The ultimate objective of the Black Lives Matter movement is to have a world where black lives are no longer systematically and intentionally neglected by society, or in the language of the Black Lives Matter, targeted for demise. Now, this movement has become national and actually international. There are chapters of the Black Lives Matter organization in Canada and in Africa. But it began with the work of three women, Alicia Garza, Patrice Kulos, and Opal Tometi, who met in 2013 at a black organizer training conference. They began discussing the indignities that they saw and felt and experienced in black communities. And then shortly after George Zimmerman's acquittal for shooting of Trayvon Martin, they began to discuss what they could do to respond to what they saw, the continuing devaluation of black lives. Garza then wrote a Facebook posting called A Love Note to Black People, in which she wrote, "Our lives matter, black lives matter." Kulos then created a social media site, hashtag Black Lives Matter. So Black Lives Matter had been born, and it actually started as an online medium for black people to voice their grief and their rage at what was happening to them and to their culture. The first in-person BLM event was in August 2014 when the BLM leaders organized a protest in a form of a freedom ride to Ferguson, Missouri, after the shooting of Michael Brown. More than 500 members went to, people participated in this, came to Ferguson to participate in the nonviolent demonstrations. Of the many groups that were there, the Black Lives Matter organization or group was the most organized and quickly became recognized nationally as the leader of this emerging new civil rights movement. After the demonstrations, the organization hosted national conference calls that focused on issues of critical importance to people who were working in local communities to liberate black people from oppression and violence that they faced in their everyday lives. Now, the movement proclaims itself to be unapologetically black in its positioning. They believe that to love and to desire freedom and justice for black people is a necessary prerequisite for wanting the same for others. They have a very extensive platform and set of principles that can be found on their website that really sets very high standards for this organization and for the black community. They include, forging a path to build and nurture a beloved community that collectively, courageously, and lovingly works for justice for Black people, and by extension, for all people. Fostering a queer-affirming network to free Black people and all people from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking. Embracing and making space for trans brothers and sisters to participate and lead, as well as being committed to self-reflection and doing the work required to dismantle cisgender, straight, privilege, and uplift Black trans folks, especially Black women, Black trans women. Working to build a Black women's affirming space free of sexism, misogyny, and male-centeredness. Working to change the Western prescribed nuclear family mindset by supporting each other as an extended family village that collectively can care for each other. And fostering an intergenerational and communal network free of ageism. Very high ideals, very high ideals. Now, the media has referred to Black Lives Matter as the new civil rights movement, and it probably is. But it is structurally very different than the civil rights movements of the 20th century. So unlike past movements where straight Black men were in front, this movement does not have charismatic leaders that have dominated Black politics for the last half century. There is no Martin Luther King Jr. or Malcolm X, no single charismatic voice that claims to speak for the many. Alicia Garza, one of the founders of BLM, says, "We have lots of leaders, just not where you might be looking for them. If you're only looking for the straight Black man who is a preacher, you aren't going to find it." The new movement has a localized power structure. It is not directed from the top, like the Southern Christian Leadership Conference or the Congress of Racial Equality was, with a single agenda. But it uses group-centered model of leadership rooted in the idea of participant democracy. It operates more like Occupy Wall Street or the protest movements in the Middle East and in South America, with relatively independent groups that work on issues that affect that community. Also, unlike the civil rights movement of the last century, women and LGBT, trans, and disabled individuals are given, at that time, were just given roles in the background or were completely ignored. BLM has an inclusive ethos that they consciously incorporate women, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, disabled, Black undocumented people, people with prison records, and Black lives along the gender spectrum in their leadership. It is also very diffused. It is not linked closely, physically closely, and not even by political consensus. It is linked by social media. And remember, it started as online, primarily Twitter, hashtag Black Lives Matter. Social media is still used very heavily by BLM to get people to see different incidences that have probably and may have gone unnoticed or unreported in the past, and then to quickly organize people, sometimes within just very few hours, to respond. So incidences like the choking of Eric Garner by a white police officer in Staten Island, or the pool party incident in McKinney, Texas, in June, where a white police officer threw a 14-year-old Black girl on the ground, pinned her down for several minutes, and then pulled guns on two teenagers that were trying to come and help. These type of incidences and many others were first reported on social media and can create an immediate response in the Black community and its allies. The movement, though, now does regularly engage in direct action by protests and rallies and marches, And they often involve chanting political slogans that are intended to push people's buttons, such as, "Hands up, don't shoot," the reference to Michael Brown. "I can't breathe," referring to Eric Gardner. "White silence is violence." "No justice, no peace." "And is my son next?" These messages are very simple, they're memorable, and they are intended to be very powerful to get the communities, black and white, to think about what's happening. So one final difference between the BLM movement and the 1960s civil rights movement is that the civil rights movements of the 1960s and 70s were focused almost exclusively on addressing civil and political rights that had been denied black people, such as access to public accommodation and the right to vote, fair employment or accommodations. But though they were trying to address, and though the movements did address the inequities, the civil inequities, they did not directly confront the devaluing of black people and the systematic violence against black people by police and white supremacist groups that BLM is really focusing on. They are intentionally focusing on this larger cultural issue than narrow civil rights issues. So the question then comes is, why black lives matter rather than all lives matter? This is one of the biggest issues surrounding the movement in the white community. And in my readings, I found three possible explanations for this controversy and for the push in white communities to talk about all lives matter. First, it might be because most people seem to always want to put things into categories or reduce things to either-or thinking. Either you support this or you support that. Either you're a Republican or you are a Democrat. Either you are a Hillary supporter or you're a Bernie supporter. You are either a vegetarian or a meat lover. You support black lives or you support police. Or if you say you support black lives, then you must not care about white lives. Or perhaps it's because the movement has an adversarial relationship with police and people do not want to be associated with that issue. Or to call out law enforcement or on its bad behavior. And because the answer then always comes up, well, it's only a few bad cops that are doing this, it's not police. So white people tend to want to neutralize the language. Or perhaps, and I think this is where I am inserting Bill's opinion, I think that this is true in Unitarian Universalist circles, is because people feel uncomfortable, embarrassed, sad, and helpless about the implications that in our society, black lives don't seem to matter as much as white lives. To have to say black lives matters implies that otherwise they don't, that they really don't matter. People want to lower their discomfort, so they wish to generalize and neutralize this explicit statement about black lives, falling back, and I know this is in Unitarian Universalist congregations, falling back on our desire to be inclusive of all people and not try to go after or talk about one specific group. So our Unitarian Universalists, so there is much, much more. I have like about 20 more pages of sermon originally written, and I don't have the time. So we can talk about that. Maybe we want to continue to talk about this. The Unitarian Universalist Association has asked through its Action of Immediate Witness statement in June 2015 that can be found in the Order of Service, very tiny print, but it's in there, to consider the issue of the longstanding dehumanization of black people and violence done to them over the years, and to find ways to be allies with the black communities in their fight against our cultural incipient racism. So next week, we will have an opportunity for UCWC to decide what we want to do on this issue. We will be voting on a resolution that has come out regarding our taking a stance on this. And so I ask, what will be our response to this challenge? So be it. Sermon podcasts are recorded live during Sunday services at the Unitarian Congregation of Westchester, Pennsylvania. The Unitarian Congregation of Westchester is a member congregation of the Unitarian Universalist Association. To sign up for our email newsletter, go to connect.ucwc.org.